everybody, and welcome to the 25th episode of Press X to Start. Press X is a weekly podcast for everyone who just sees gaming in some sort of a way, whether it's as a hobby, or you're part of the fandom, or you're just loosely in the ecosystem.
Or a lone wolf that just likes to play Mario.
Yeah. It's for all of y'all.
Who doesn't love to play Mario?
Cam.
What's up? Now on this episode.
But we here at Press X to Start want to be inclusive.
He made it two in a row.
We want to be inclusive. And, you know, we hope that Press X can break down walls with our discussions of news, reviews, and all things video gaming.
Yeah.
Your hosts are myself, not Cameron Williams.
Are you sure?
Exactly.
Okay.
DJ Harris.
Hi. Hey, neighbor.
I'm still working on it.
By episode 40.
Right.
You better get it together. And Avery Williams.
Charmed, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Cam is out getting milk again.
He's a neglectful father. And he brought this podcast into this world. And then he left. How dare he? Our mother is crying. And by our mother, we mean Avery.
Right. Avery hasn't cried since 1997.
So. Wait. Avery just referred to himself in third person.
That's a conversation for later.
Right.
Okay. As a reminder, all podcasts can be found on Podbean.
I want to say with last year, I want to say in March. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Did you make a note of it?
Let me put this in my calendar.
Oh, this is strange.
I was in character as Avery Williams, a robot, so I'm like, oh, but then I realized Avery Williams is a real person. I may have had an emotional breakdown at some point in March of last year. I may have cried.
This got dark.
Right?
Real fast. But
speaking of dark,
as a reminder, all podcasts can be found on Podbean at pressxtostart.podbean.com, iTunes and Google Play at PressXToStart. Also, if you would like to join the conversation, please do. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at PressX2Start. Also, if you have the time, be a dear. Give us a rating or review on iTunes, because every little bit helps. So now, we're going to move into what have we been playing.
Yes.
And we've got, you know, actually a pretty solid myriad of games that we're going to be going through.
Really, it was the same myriad of games as last week.
Look. There's a couple of different things. All right.
Okay.
This is true.
You know, we got Persona. We got Hellblade. We got Batman. We got
More Fortnite. Yeah.
So, starting with Avery.
Okay, so I have played, well, as everyone knows, I've been working on this Persona Platinum.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, I was like, I'll have it done by this week. No, that's not true. To be honest, I fucked myself in my first playthrough. There were certain Personas I could have gotten.
Did you at least use lotion?
I was like, can you do that?
I never use lotion.
Is that?
But no,
he's just dry handed. He's an arsonist.
Oh, so no. In the first playthrough, there were certain personas I could have gotten.
Right.
That I just should have ignored. I didn't think that I'd have to get the compendium, but now I do. With the treasure demons? Yeah, the treasure demons. So now I have to play the entire game up to the last couple of dungeons to acquire them. And that's not counting how hard the last boss is,
right,
and me not getting the tools.
Mm.
That trophy, so I still have three trophies to go, but this game's got three more days, because like Age of Mayhem is coming out Tuesday,
yeah,
and I am super psyched about that game. I don't care if the rest of the world isn't. That game looks awesome.
Hey, you could be that lone wolf and playing Age of Mayhem.
I honestly think Age of Mayhem is going to do fine.
Okay.
I think there's a weird hyperbole about it it's not going to do well.
Yeah.
Because like it, when the people who make it, if you look at the pedigree of Volition and then you look at the way they talk about the game,
right,
nothing about it really seems like everything seems about like,
okay,
oh, this is great. This is great.
Yeah, I mean, because originally,
it's
like,
just sort of niche.
The success of the Saints Row series was because it was in between the GTA series.
Right.
But like now that GTA Online's a thing, I kind of worry about how it's going to affect it.
Well,
I think they have their own audience at this point.
I think Agents of Mayhem looks, at this point, looks like Crackdown meets Overwatch.
Yeah, okay.
Someone who doesn't think the next countdown is going to set the world on fire, I think this game is going to...
It's going to set itself on fire.
Okay, here's a good thing. If you like Overwatch and want a single-player game, play Aims of Mayhem. That's exactly what that game looks like.
Yeah, that's true.
I can see that.
But other than that, I played played some Fortnite. I managed to get from Stonewood to Plankerton with the help of DJ helped me with my new some base missions. The Plankerton levels are actually hard.
Really?
Yeah, like the game Stonewood got hard at the very end.
Yeah, yeah.
But Plankerton literally like, oh man, I'm running out of ammo real quick. My health is dying. Defending these bases, like you have to pay attention.
Really?
And, oh man.
Boy, okay.
Well, that's a solid segue over to DJ and his Fortnite and adventures.
I've just been playing Fortnite. And so I have delved into the YouTubes of Fortnite and fort building.
Yeah.
And boy, howdy, have I been playing this game wrong. There's been a couple of people on YouTube that have been posting their fort design. Okay, so let me backtrack a little bit. The way that Fortnite is set up,
mm-hmm.
you have your own base,
right?
And the idea is that you go back to your base and you build up your base and you defend your base from like waves of monsters it's like periodically throughout the
story. Every two to three main pages of the story.
Right.
Or story outline.
Yeah. So.
So is there like a legit story here?
Not really. There's like an outline of things going on that pushes you forward.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
It's like. You complete this objective, character A will say something funny, and that'll lead you to the next objective. But at no point is your like cutscenes or you're meeting characters,
yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Making choices.
So it's not like it's not like a SimCity / meets Fallout hybrid.
No. Okay, so yeah, so I've been watching looking at other people's forts and seeing like how they're designing it and like the pros and cons of their stuff. And I have been playing this game entirely wrong. I wish I could go back from start and just like.
Well, if you're like me, Plankerton, which they erase periodically.
Oh yeah, so yeah, that's another thing too. We'll talk about that sometime. But people have been building traps that are just looping the monsters through, and like it. I don't know what like. The way I play games, this should have been the first thing I thought about.
Mm-hmm.
But like when I saw it, I literally like paused the video and I was just like, "Oh my god!"
Are
they
using those pads, those launch things?
Yes.
Okay, explain. Yes. Explain while they're in
and,
there.
And I think I told you like I don't know how to use these things.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you use it. Like it is. It's so.
So
amazing.
I'm guessing if the monster's AI once it's been pushed won't like my thing is I thought when it happens that it gets pushed and it tries to go back immediately where it was.
Right.
So the way it works is the AI will travel to the route to the objective in the least resistance.
Push the route. Cool. Football.
I'm sorry. I'm blanking.
path of least resistance.
There you go. Path of least resistance. Least. Oh, jeez. Anyway, skipping over. So like the way that these people are setting up their bases, they would have the monsters like go up a ramp and they'll go up a ramp and then they'll go down a straight path. And on the path, the ground would have like spikes and stuff. And then there'd be a wall to the side that pushes the enemies off of the wall onto the ground. They'll get up, they'll go up and around and go up the hill again. And they just do that route over again.
Oh.
That is the easiest way to get to.
Wow. I just never. Oh, wow. I never thought of that. My thing was like, I'm just going to put a bunch of spikes here, and let them walk into
it.
And
you know what's funny? The start of his video, he was like, this is how people normally make their bases. And I was like, that's how my base looks.
Like, shots fired.
How dare you trash me like that? But yeah, like it's just been, I think it's funny that we're doing this podcast so I can have a record of my impressions on this game as time goes on.
Yeah.
Because I am loving this game now.
See? Yeah.
My thing with a lot of games is that, especially with players, is we don't give them enough credit. A lot of games is all about expectations.
Yeah.
When you meet the expectations of a game and what it wants to do, you'll enjoy it as long as you're willing to enjoy it.
And that's the danger of first impressions is a lot of times your first impressions, especially in terms of games or comic books or something that you're going to spend time with, it's going to change over the course.
Right.
So while you were not really here for it at first, I'm not that surprised that things have kind of taken
turned a turn. Yeah.
Especially for me, because I think we talked about it when that episode when we started, first started playing, like, I was super turned off by Fortnite immediately because the expectations you had given me were quite different than what the actual game was.
Yeah.
But then I slowly, when I set my expectations correctly, I'm like, oh, this is actually really fun.
Yeah,
actually
right. Really, and like, this. I'm pretty sure if my wife was on the podcast, she'd be like, well, I told you so. Because I have a tendency of, oh, this looks like crap. Oh, I love this game.
As your friend, I noticed that a lot.
Yeah. another thing too is that, like, with playing this game, I've noticed that you want to really shoot, like, the zombies as little as possible because you are expending ammo.
Right.
And that's something that you're going to need when you're defending, like, your
base. That's actually something funny that I had to go through.
And, like, there's no real like, reward for killing the zombies.
Oh, okay. So it's just, like, kind of a...
The combat.
The combat's
good. But, like, I mean...
I when I first started the game, they gave me the assault rifle, and that was the weapon I used, the automatic one. And I just got the better version one, and I kept using it, and I would just keep going through ammo really quickly. And then I started using the semi-automatic one.
Yes.
And I'm like, okay, quick burst. And I'm like, oh, this is much better.
Yep.
This is much better.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm really enjoying this game, and I'm starting to understand how it's supposed to be played.
So you're hitting your groove, your stride.
If I have one comment about Fortnite at this point, I think the loot system is... This is where the free-to-play part of it is really starting to buck up against my enjoyment of it.
Yeah.
Getting cool, interesting loot has immediately slowed down.
I could absolutely agree with that.
And that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because now it means that, like...
And another thing, too, with... If you get loot while in-game, you actually just get the item. You don't get the schematic.
Yeah.
So you get the item that one time, and the durability of that item is often decreased.
Yeah.
So you don't get to keep it. And you can't fix any items in this game. Well, you can't fix anything.
Yeah, I don't like that.
No. Yeah. But that's been my experience with Fortnite.
True, true. And me, in a shocking turn of events, once again, new games, and not just one game. But two games.
And two new games that actually came out this year, guys.
Yeah, exactly. Boy, see, everything's coming up, Marcus. So this week, I bought and then played immediately Batman The Evil Within, which is Telltale's new season of the Batman series. Right. And then...
So is that like season 2, episode 1?
Yes. Season 2, episode 1.
It's just going forward, they have, like, different names for the seasons. Right,
we can definitely do a spoiler on this when it all comes out finally.
Oh, yeah.
In, like, 3 years.
for sure. I mean, I think that it's all going to wrap up by, like, January at the latest anyway. So I played that, and once again, you know, I loved the first season in terms of just the story that they told and kind of given a fresh new take on Batman and his villains and even the city of Gotham. And this continues that trend. Really cool, interesting take on the Riddler. John Doe continues to be an interesting aspect.
Yeah.
And one thing they...
John Doe is referring to as a Joker.
Yeah.
Or at least this game's version of the Joker.
Yeah.
So they don't know that he's a Joker.
Well, the thing is, you know immediately that he's the Joker. But
because of Batman.
He's not Joker yet.
Okay. This game is predicated on this idea that the first season of Batman, you haven't been Batman for very long. Exactly. Batman is a very new thing in Gotham.
Yeah.
So all of the classic Batman tropes, like his rogues, his adversaries, his allies, all of them are they're all getting new. So by the end of the first game, you finally establish a relationship with Commissioner Gordon, like, okay, me and Batman are friends.
Yep.
Like, all of these things. So, like, I think in the mental hospital section of episode four, you meet this guy who's got green hair and pale white skin. He seems really nice, but he's clearly crazy. It's clearly the Joker.
Yeah.
And, like, the episode ends, like, he just gets away. And, like, it's like, oh, I'll definitely see you in the future.
And the cool thing is...
I'm sorry. Yeah. My understanding of that game, that it was supposed to be, like, very different from the typical Batman story.
It's not super different, but it's just a fresh new take on things.
That's always been my big thing with the show. It is a show at this point. People were talking about how, like, it was this piece of amazing Batman fiction lore and one of the best stories Batman ever told. It's really good. It's not the best. It's not
Well, as somebody who...
It's subverting expectations more than doing anything really new or with the franchise.
Right.
In that the main crux of what separates this from everything else that Batman's ever done, this is a world where the Waynes are villains.
Yep. Or at least Thomas Wayne is.
The, so the two people who raised...
So wait, is he still alive?
No, they're both dead.
They're both dead. But they were...
The idea that the Waynes were these amazing people who gave Bruce the sort of fortitude to become Batman.
It's immediately broken down, and then that's one of the cruxes of the first season, is him coming to terms with that reality. And because
and what did that mean for Batman?
Exactly.
Because like, he's avenging two awful people who probably deserve to die.
Exactly, because then before... His parents' death drove him to become this epitome of justice.
Right.
But now finding out that Thomas Wayne was a criminal, and we don't know about Martha Wayne, but definitely Thomas Wayne, it's like, oh,
a
man.
Criminal in, like, what way?
He was a mob boss.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And great. So, and without going into much, like, he had his hands in a lot of the messed up things going on in Gotham. Mm. So now it's like, okay, so am I Batman now for myself, or, yeah.
Right.
But to season two, you know, like Riddler, it's got a really cool take of his viewpoint is he has seniority in Gotham. Like he was here before Batman. He was doing this stuff. He was the smartest man in the room. And so he's got that thing.
So is he playing, is he more of a villain?
Yeah, no, he's definitely a villain.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
And then, you know, you got this group called the Pact going on in the background.
Okay.
And you got John Doe. And one of the interesting things they're introducing this season is you're basically going to, with your choices, craft the Joker's origin story.
That's
because his relationship with you, the flip side with Joker they're doing now is instead of being obsessed with Batman, he's obsessed with Bruce. And that immediately puts certain things in Bruce's life in jeopardy in a different way.
Right.
And so like they're doing this really interesting thing this season.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm really here for it. Okay. And then I played Hellblade as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that game.
Wait, say the full title.
Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice.
Okay.
And that game.
For some reason, people are having a hard time saying Senua.
Well, you know,
yeah.
People with names. they can't say Quvenzhané Wallace. but they can say Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right.
Because reasons.
No, me, because I have the N-word.
Oh, I'm going to learn this word.
Schwarzenegger. So, that game, it might have made me turn a bit of a corner. It's too early to say because we're going to have to see what they do from here. But it might have had me turn a bit of a corner on Ninja Theory.
Really?
Ninja Theory, up until this point, my issues with Ninja Theory came from...
Ninja Gaiden?
Well, no, not, it had nothing to do with that.
The whole series?
Ninja Theory, my issue with Ninja Theory was they had these cool ideas, but whether the execution was off or because I think they would do this thing where they were trying to go with lifelike faces
right.
and models,
right.
but the graphical power just wasn't up to snuff back then to make that work, so they had this weird, awkward, uncanny valley quality, especially Heavenly Sword, which just was real awkward to look at a lot of the time. And then on top of that, what they did with Devil May Cry, which burned a lot of bridges, understandably so, for a lot of people, because the game was solid, but they just didn't understand what made Dante or the series work. And to make matters worse, they antagonized fans for being upset about
it. Yeah, they sure did.
And so, yeah, so they burned a lot of bridges. I wasn't a Ninja Theory guy. But then I heard about Hellblade, and I was like, this seems really interesting. And finding out they did research, and they actually had people that had experience either from experiencing themselves or working with people with psychosis issues, craft the game with them, I was like, that's really awesome. A lot of people wouldn't do that. I'm gonna see what this is about. Plus, it came out at $30, and it's a tout 6 to 8 hour game.
And I believe their wording for their choicing in price was, this is a, they know
they're changing expectations.
Yeah. Right. They want to make a AAA game, but it's technically, like,
but they didn't
want
to. Yeah, but they didn't want to compare this. They didn't want comparisons to AAA games.
Yeah,
they wanted to make an AAA game.
Yeah.
And
so they charged an indie price.
Basically. A tad bit concerned about that initially because I was like, does that mean that they rushed this out a little bit?
Yeah,
but no. I'll say without giving anything away,
well,
because
about
we got
the
spoiler.
About 2.5 years.
Yeah. So one thing that I'll say without giving anything away, because we're going to do a spoiler cast, is this. At least in terms of storytelling and presentation, is my game of the year.
Really?
I won't go into anything else until later.
That's awesome.
So yeah.
Okay.
Now we're going to cross over.
And this is before Destiny 2.
Boy, I ain't playing no damn Destiny 2. You know I ain't playing no damn Destiny 2. But now, we're going to take this time to pass it over to news correspondent Chip Daggerly for gaming news. Chip?
Well, I'm here at the press at for start Caucasian home to talk to you about the newest in gaming news.
I think that's awesome. I think we should keep that.
Okay, so first big news story is last week when we were going on, well, when everyone else was going on incessantly about Doomfist, we forgot to mention that Overwatch the Summer Games had launched as well.
We didn't forget. I mean,
we totally forgot, DJ.
Totes forgot.
That was a 20-minute conversation about Doomfist.
Hey, just deserved, all right?
All right, so Summer Games launched this week, so yeah. I am officially put $40 into this game.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, they changed the loot system, as we talked about. Right. Well, I think it's a great change. That loot system has fucked me. Because before, because there were so many duplicates, and so many duplicates of different rarity, I would usually spend $20 and get maybe 1,000 to 2,500 in gold.
Right.
Yeah.
Now I only get gold when they decide to give me gold, and because they're more interested in giving me
items
I'm not getting gold, which means I can't purchase things I want. So I can't get that awesome Sombra skin, and I got all the other shitty skins from this. I got the McCree lifeguard skin, which I didn't want. I got the
McCree skins. Like, I don't.
Did you get that Soldier 76 skin?
I actually did. I got the Soldier Dad skin.
That skin is great.
That is awesome.
That is dope.
He's got on socks with sandals.
It's awesome.
It's high shorts.
I also got the BMX Reaper. That was the first. Like, when I literally opened the first thing, every event of Wolf gives you one box.
Right.
I opened that box and got that skin.
Wow.
And I'm like, I don't fucking want this.
Yeah.
I want that Sombra skin. I also really want that Widowmaker skin. Yeah, I'm not gonna lie.
I gotta get my on Overwatch to get that. Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, I think what they're doing now going forward with these events is they're just going to redo the same sort of events until one gets stale. Maybe replace that with something different.
Right.
And just add new skins, new stuff. Like last one was fully Olympics. This one is beach themed.
One thing I want to say though is I'm mad salty. There ain't no new May skins.
See, that's what always bothers me is that every time they do this, they pick like a couple people.
Yeah,
and it's just like, well, if it's not my main, then it's just like, well, exactly. And like May doesn't really get any love when it comes to skins.
Exactly. Well, she got in the Chinese New Year one. She got two brand new skins, and then she got in the Overwatch anniversary. I think everyone got a new skin, but then she got that Beekeeper one. She also got one in the creek. Like May's gotten skins.
Really?
Yeah.
I just haven't gotten any of them.
Like, I don't know.
As a dude whose main was D.Va, like, D.Va is someone who always got skins.
D.Va got mad skins.
And really great skins. She also has a Blizzard exclusive skin, which...
So basically, you're lucky, yes.
Yeah.
Good job.
But anyway, so other than the Summer Games news, which we're all really excited about, is that Overwatch is testing out Team Deathmatch.
Deathmatch!
That was awesome.
And
totally not playing.
No. I'm of two minds when it comes to Deathmatch. I think it inherently goes against the spirit of Overwatch.
Which does.
The teamwork thing.
Yeah.
But it's awesome.
The first person shooter guy, and I'm like, I play some Deathmatch.
Yeah, right?
I'm like, I'm tired of playing on the team and like,
and not letting me kill the people.
You know what I'm saying? We gotta link up and Team Deathmatch that hoe.
But here's my problem. Team Deathmatch works with Overwatch's MIU because you're still playing as a team. You're still doing those team things. It's just a traditional Deathmatch.
Right.
Technically, their duels and their three-member squad things are Deathmatches. So it's not like it hasn't been already in there.
Right.
But it's actual like normal Deathmatch, which I think is a problem. Because some characters are just not balanced for...
Absolutely.
Mercy's
entirely useless.
Orisa might have problems... Like
Soldier 76, I would be not surprised if he's the only character to be played in Team Deathmatch.
Because he can sprint.
He can sprint. He can heal himself. He has that
he's
one
not your
move.
Father.
But how do you guys feel about Team Deathmatch?
I'm all for Team Deathmatch, baby.
Yeah.
I'm all for adding new modes.
Yeah, exactly. Because the thing is, like, you were talking about how it's going to be ever-evolving game, and if they're going to have staying power for the foreseeable future, they're going to have to keep adding things on.
Yeah.
So it makes total sense to me that they'd bring that back, especially because of how big deathmatch culture is in the online multiplayer world.
I just want to see if this cures the conversation of Overwatch. Because one conversation we were having on our private press X Slack was like payload
and how versus capture the flag.
That's true. Capture the flag, and yeah. I, someone who really likes capture the flag more than like payload, but I can acknowledge that payload is more in line with what the philosophy of Overwatch is.
Yeah.
But that shifted the conversation. I want to see how this shifts the conversation and what Overwatch becomes.
Right.
Because it would be interesting if they somehow suddenly we get a new chain for Mercy, when they realize, oh, she's entirely useless in the team deathmatch. So now we change.
That's true.
Right. So like, also, that's where my stance is. Like, I think this is a cool experiment. I'm not too sure how they're going to work out the viability of all of the characters in this.
I do also find myself wondering
the game pool, because there's another new mode that you have to find a lobby to play in.
There's the free for all in the team deathmatch.
I find myself wondering two things. One, if the next person that they bring out character wise, especially if deathmatch is super popular, if it's going to be suited for that, and I get a feeling that this is definitely the deathmatch experiment is also factoring into World League.
Well, yeah, I can definitely.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I think the World League is still dedicated to that pushing the payload, that objective stuff.
But do you think that'll shift a little bit?
Yeah,
I think it all just depends on how this deathmatch mode goes.
Yeah,
like if it really works, then they might like change their plans a little bit.
Right.
If it fails, then whatever. They still have a strong game.
That's true.
So
I don't think it's going to fail. I think because if they
may not fail, but like not like, do as well.
Yeah. If they promote it as much, it's like, I feel like in the World thing, it's going to be a separate thing, and the main thing is still going to be the tenets of Overwatch, capture points, pushing the payload thing.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
Other news. This is a sort of update from last week. I believe we talked about the Amiibos.
Yeah.
And I may have gone on a weird Avery Williams Love Amiibos rant on it. I apologize. I just really love Amiibos. I don't want to see them go. But just to clarify, the news out of last week was that Nintendo was hiding a hard mode behind this $14 Amiibo.
Right. Yeah.
It's coming, and it's weird messaging, because Nintendo was like, read our Facebook blog, and like, it was like, you're not telling us anything there, and they've come out and said, no, we're not hiding hard mode. We're hiding a specific separate mode, which is Fusion mode. Mm-hmm. Hard mode is in the game, you can play hard mode. Right. That's not what they're hiding.
Okay.
Super Fusion mode is, the very semantics, hard mode. You can call it very hard mode, but it's not. It's another ancillary thing. You can argue the semantics of whether this should be on there from the beginning.
Yeah.
Should this be a natural unlock and things like that?
Right.
But it's not hard mode.
Okay.
Okay, so moving on from that, since we're talking about Telltale Games and Telltale Batman, which apparently was super popular, that they didn't even wait a year to start doing a new one.
Yeah. I was shocked when they said, like, because when they announced the next four games they're going to be putting out, and they said, you can expect the first episode of Batman Evil Within in August. I'm like, yo.
I played the original one in December of last year.
I'm like,
when it finished. So I'm like,
y'all aren't even finished with Guardians.
Before we learned about Batman.
Exactly. Jeez. So I was like, good Lord, y'all are quick with this.
Yeah. But in other news, we've recently learned through ex-Telltale members and things like that, the one Telltale game I told everyone to play and was the best, Tales of the Borderlands, was a failure to Telltale.
I don't understand.
That's insane.
I don't understand that at all. Because as far as I'm concerned, and from what I've seen, that's one of their more popular ones.
Right.
And then on top of that, with the direct tie-ins and stuff like that to the Borderlands universe, I don't understand how, unless the only way I can see it being a failure is if they didn't like it, the Borderlands team, but they apparently love it. So.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting thing, because another thing they were talking about is that one of the points of Tales of the Borderlands was to create characters for Borderlands 3. And for 2K and the Gearbox of the studio to utilize and use forward. And I like Reese Fiona. I like all those characters. I would love to see them in Borderlands 3. Hell, I would like if you took those four characters, Vaughn, Reese, Fiona, and Fiona's sister, Sasha, and just made them the four new Vault Hunters for Borderlands 3.
Yeah.
But whatever. I'm also like you. I don't understand how this happened. I think it's the best of the Telltale games by far in terms of taking a franchise, doing something new with it, and telling a really good story.
Right. That's what I understood too, that this was the best one of their...
I just don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, and when they say they viewed it as a failure, does that mean like they're not going to do anything with it going forward?
I don't think so.
did they view it as a fair as Square Enix viewed? What game was that?
Tomb Raider?
That'd be a damn shame, too.
I don't know.
We sold, like, well from what we thought, but their expectations were higher.
I'd have to look into the story more. I'm only on the cursory anecdotal stage of this story that's going forward.
Then again, though.
But, like,
I'm not going to be too worried just yet, just because with the fervor that they had, that people had online for Wolf Among Us, and that ended up making them decide to do a second season. If it's popular enough, the fans will make their voices heard, and they won't have any choice but to ignore it, we'll see.
Yeah. Other story. So Xbox is restructuring their achievements. We don't know the exact.
Are they doing trophies?
I wish.
Next story.
Avery dust off his Xbox and starts
getting
work.
I buy it back from GameStop.
Oh no.
But no, we don't know the exact details of what they're actually going to do, because like, if you're a dude who has 6-7 digit gamer score, this is going to send fear down your spine.
Yeah.
Shooketh.
But I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to combat the fact that because there are more live games, or more games are taking more and more time.
Right.
They want to alter the way gamer score factors into that. So, like, previously, you play Destiny, you get the 1,000 gamer score for it, but you still play it after you get that 1,000 gamer score. You're no longer earning gamer score.
Right.
I'm personally, I love them to make them just like trophies, but yeah. I don't think trophies, based on what they're trying to achieve, trophies wouldn't solve that problem either.
Right, right.
What I think they might happen is they might remove the cap for gamer score. So, like, a team would be fundamentally able to go in after that and say, here's 500, 1,000 more points.
Makes sense.
Okay.
And so, like, for those people who keep playing, they can still keep earning gamer score outside of just DLC.
Okay. So was the idea that people would continue play a game but cap out on their gamer score?
Yeah, like people would keep playing games like Destiny, get like 1,000 gamer score,
and
they still play it, and they weren't earning more gamer score. And I think Xbox saw that and said, maybe we can alter this to be to cater to that type of gameplay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Xbox. I'll see you.
Keep trying.
Also, another big story that came out, No Man's Sky. they've released a new update. They call it the Atlas update, and it's bringing a bunch of major changes to No Man's Sky.
Yep.
So much that I'm going to go back and play this game.
Really?
Yeah.
I was going to make a joke about who's going to play this game.
Well,
and then I was going to say Fortnite. And that's my joke. But yeah, no, actually, I think I might also dive into this now.
Like, a big thing about they're doing it now is systemic missions now. It's like, before, No Man's Sky was all about wandering, it was all about exploration, there was no real objective. You had one, which I found out later after the fact, was like not that really of a great thing to do. I spent like I'm gonna say an hour just going from the galaxy map and trying to find the center of the universe from there.
Yeah.
Just to see how far I was from away with it.
Yeah.
I was still super fucking far away. So I just looked it up. What's the end of No Man's Sky? And it's like, go back to the beginning.
Ooh. I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
Wolf's Rain?
That's in the center of No Man's Sky.
You just go back to the beginning?
Yeah, there's no big secret.
That is terrible.
Yeah, I know. That's the reason
is terrible.
That's the reason I stopped playing. Because that was the only objective the game gave me. And I it didn't seem satisfying. So I said, fuck it, I'm not gonna play this game anymore.
I swear that was like one of the biggest secrets left in my life.
Shooketh.
Oh my gosh. You just go back to the beginning?
Yeah, I believe so. I could easily be wrong. I could have been reading a fucked up article that was making fun of the game. But I believe that is what it is.
Wow.
But anyway, this new update's adding a bunch of new stuff. So one specific missions and things like that. So you go into a new galaxy and there are missions that you can do that will teach you new things about the game, give you structure, give you a path, it will give structure for those people who got tired of just wandering. And I think there's also story elements as well.
Yeah, you enter a new galaxy and start over from scratch.
Fuck. Oh, no, he's referring to the center of the universe.
Oh my gosh. Oh
man.
Another big thing about the Atlas update is it introduces multiplayer. Not multiplayer where multiple people are existing in your world, you can see them, but it creates
co-op?
No, it's not co-op. It's like if you enter the same instance of a world as someone else, they will appear on your map as like a glowing blue ball.
Oh.
Like, but it's, that is like the germ of an idea. DJ is still, still upset. Like.
So you just start over? Like, you lose all your shit?
I don't think
what? I can't, man. Fortnite.
But yeah, continue.
So I believe this is the germ of the idea for right, adding full-on co-op. Because now they've created on these servers, now you can have multiple people existing in the same area, same space.
Mm.
So now I believe with this, if they go on to further updates, you can have full-on multiplayer in the same, in the, probably in the next couple of years. They introduced portals now, so I believe you can teleport across the galaxy in No Man's Sky.
Yeah.
Now you're thinking with portals.
Mm. Yeah.
Especially the places you've already been before. So that idea, because that was one of the weird things about No Man's Sky in the last update, where you can build bases and things like that. Like,
but entire, yeah, no way of getting back to
exactly the entire point of the game is like you're going forward. How am I going to get back to my base? I think they've solved that.
Boy, like I had found a back when I played No Man's Sky for like 2 or 3 months. I found like a world that was just covered with like gold. It's like, this is amazing. I'll be right back. Never found that planet again.
404, planet not found.
Man, but
there was other updates and things in No Man's Sky. I don't want to be going to bog down this podcast into details.
Yeah.
But this update looks really cool.
Yeah.
I still like No Man's Sky. My expectations were set at the right place when that game came out.
Yeah.
I wasn't, despite the hyperbole of that game surrounding it, I was not expecting this giant thing.
Right.
I played it. I'm like, oh, this is super relaxing. It's super chill. I can listen to podcasts and play this game and just not be distracted. So.
Until you get bit by like a crab looking ant thing and you're like, oh, fuck.
Pinch.
Yeah. Right. They added suborbital flight.
No, really?
So you can finally get on your ship and fly around the planet and actually see what's going on the planet.
Oh, that's great.
It's no gum-gum ship.
Gummy ship.
Whatever.
Gum-gum is one piece.
Yeah. Right? Gum-gum fruit.
I watched an episode of that.
In our final big news story, the one we're all super angry,
the biggin.
Cam is in here to state his case. We talked about... Actually, we talked about this in our private Slack channel.
We talked about this a lot.
Yeah. A lot, because Cam is very adamant on his certain feelings on this.
Yep.
So, Shadow of War, Middle-Earth Shadow of War has introduced microtransactions into its single player.
Mm-hmm.
This caused a big shitstorm in the gaming market about microtransactions in replacing games. Not just games, but single...
In a console AAA game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So, at this point, I would have allowed Cam to go on his rant about why microtransactions are predatory, bad, they're anti-consumer, and that we should be fighting against
them. Microtransactions are... last episode of Press X's podcast. Yeah.
Microtransactions are bad.
I'll give you the receipts of our conversation. I stated on the record that I don't think they're bad. I think they can be predatory.
If
the game is transparent with what these are and what they do. That is totally true. But the general idea of microtransactions aren't a bad thing. There's also this idea that they're necessary evil. I don't want to say they're, like, calling them an evil is kind of fucked up to what they really are there for, but I'll let DJ go and we're going to have a conversation on this.
Microtransactions are like the wind. You know, on a hot day, it could be a nice cool breeze. Uh-huh. But in the middle of a hurricane, it can really fuck you over. So, I mean, like, I think this is a very, very kind of weird and different thing to happen now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you read the tea leaves, this is, we all saw this coming.
Yes, we've all seen this
coming. So yeah, it's more so just the audience catching up to the industry.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like
it's the same way digital games and PC when digital became a thing for console people.
Right.
And the idea that you don't own the game, you own the license. Digital people on PC have been like, yeah, we've been dealing with this for ages. All the
time. Right. So it's just something that we're just gonna have to get used to. I mean, when I say that, I don't mean like you're just gonna have to get used to getting punched in the face.
No.
It's just like you know, there's going to be good implementations of this, there's going to be bad implementations of this, and just like a good and bad game, like, we're just going to have to be able to parse through that.
So in regards to Shadow of Mordor and its microtransactions, ultimately, I don't think they're a big deal. I think we only can judge them when the game is coming out and people are like, oh, this, they're clearly made this game to be
once
about
we have actual evidence of...
But as of now, it just seems like, do I want to move through this faster?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Fine. It's my money. I can do whatever the hell I want with it.
All right. And yeah. I also think, like, I wonder how they themselves are going to take this feedback and if they are possibly reworking some of their systems to compensate for the negative feedback because this is going to hurt their sales.
I think one of the things people had a big point of contention with these microtransactions was that, okay, the big defense against four microtransactions was, this is not affecting you at all. You're playing your game, they're playing their game. No point is their microtransactions going to affect you.
Single player.
Because single player. But they've talked about how you can buy loot with real money to outfit your orc to send them into this online leaderboard.
Yep. And that's...
that's where it gets kind of icky.
Fell over like, what?
Yeah, that's where it got icky. Yeah. I think my only rationale for that is that I think all the everything it's loot boxes, so everything is RNG.
Yeah.
So it's not guaranteeing that you're going to get anything good to put on your orc and send them forward. So there's that, but at its core, when
loot, that's still not cool.
Like,
even if it's not a guaranteed thing, the fact that that's an option.
Yeah, I think almost the fact that, I guess for me, the fact that it is loot boxes versus the immediate, like, I want this, I buy this, is kind of a bit more predatory. Dun, dun, dun. Because, like, I just feel like that system, that's the whole gambling aspect behind microtransactions.
Yeah.
And that is the more negative aspect that people are worried about. So I definitely feel like maybe you guys can save this. Maybe you guys want this.
Well, here's the problem, though. If they don't, I think their loot box idea is the only way to save them monetizing that part of the game. Because if they just put buy this orc for this amount of money, that ultimately fucks up everything anyway.
That's true.
Right.
By putting in that gambling chance, then that at least puts you on an even playing field, even though it is icky.
You bringing up gambling, though, just had me thinking of a guy who's like got a gambling addiction,
just
buying loot boxes.
I want to point, loot boxes have become a big part of the game going forward. And as someone who, like, I've been thinking a lot about loot boxes and things like that because of questions like this.
Mm-hmm.
And someone pointed out that loot boxes have been a thing before games.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyone who played a collectible card game and opened up a booster pack understands what a loot box is.
If you bought a bottle, a box of Cracker Jack, or you know, a cereal,
McDonald's Happy Meal,
or a Wonder Ball.
That was a loot box of food in it.
Nah, man, you can straight up ask them, man.
Yeah,
I've asked them.
Oh wait, what?
Yeah,
or a Wonder Ball.
They're 15 year old kids. They do not care about the random chance.
I've been living my life alone.
But yeah. So I don't know. I mean, hopefully they can rectify this, or
a big question I think about this is I'm going to be quoting Cam on certain aspects of this part of the conversation.
Here we go.
Because we have them in the Slack channel and he can fight me if he wants to. No, I asked him. He seemed very against this idea, very against this, and I totally understand that. He has his principles. He has his pill to die on. He's going to die on it. But when I asked him, hey, are you going to still play this game?
Figuratively.
Yeah, are you still going to play this game? And his response was, yeah, if it's good and on a sale, I'll pick it up.
Right.
And I'm like, you're not sitting on your hill anymore.
And
that's the problem with when games make these decisions that we think we as a community hate. It's not enough of us have the fortitude of being like,
we don't speak with our wallets.
We don't.
Yeah.
He's like, I'll pick it up.
Or initially we do, and then we realize, I want to play that game, actually.
Yeah. Like, would you happen with me and Mass Effect? Actually, Cam is the reason I picked up Mass Effect. Cam would not stop talking about how excited he was for that game.
Yeah.
And even as someone who's, like, on the outs on the Mass Effect franchise after the ending of 3, I'm like, I'm not going to support this. I supported it because of him, and I super regret it. But speaking of that, he's like, hey, you pick it up on sale, and I'm like, you're still paying for this game, though. You're still paying to the developers, and like you're like you like when you have to when
you're still supporting the game.
You're still supporting the game.
Yeah.
At the city.
Yeah, right.
And like it's one of those things where like it's that super hard part of the pure entertainment of this game, and then your mental, your principles, and how that buck up against them.
Yeah, right. That's true.
And I fundamentally think, the microtransactions added to this game are less of a cash grab. This makes money. We want to make money.
Yeah.
And more of, I think the first Shadow of War did well, but I don't think it did super well for a AAA game on all platforms.
Right.
I feel like the microtransaction part of it is them trying to gird their loins in regards to, if this game doesn't sell well, at least we'll have these microtransactions to justify a lot of the back-end development costs on it.
Right.
We also had a conversation in our Slack chat about the increasing cost of making games in this age.
Exactly.
And one of the reasons me and DJ, for at least, aren't really opposed to microtransactions are they're just another form of revenue to keep games at the quality level that we want them.
Right.
Like, I bring this up. Overwatch as a game would not exist as it is without microtransactions.
That's true.
Everyone just spent $60 and that team said everything else is coming for free, that wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
The loot boxes, the free content, the three characters, that's only there because people like me spend $20 to $40 every event to reinvest in that game.
Right, right. There are people spending money on the game so other people can get content for that game for free. And that's kind of what it boils down to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a sticky, nuanced conversation.
Sure is. We're going to jump off this, and we're going to jump into our culture segment.
Yes.
What?
Now, with the release of Hellblade and just being a game that touches on heavy, real-world topics, while also existing in this fantasy world, it had us sitting here questioning and wondering the age-old question, if games are art.
Yes.
And
that's been another exciting episode.
And it's just, I guess we'll just go around and kind of see where we stand on the side of the argument, because there's art and then there's entertainment.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's where I always have a problem with making that statement. And then you add the economic monetary part of gaming. Yep. And a lot of decisions are made on a monetary standpoint, less of a art for the sake of art standpoint, that I always sort of vacillate with that. Like, from what you tell me about Hellblade, the fact that it's an indie AAA game that does all this interesting story stuff, things like that, it sounds like art.
Mm-hmm.
But then if I pick up a Call of Duty game and play that, that sounds like entertainment.
Yeah.
And so I don't think you can make the blanket statement, are games art? But I do think certain games transcend the entertainment and become art.
Though, with that caveat, though, can't that be applied to all things in the art
realm? Exactly, and that's where this conversation gets super messy.
Yeah. So yeah, that's actually what I wanted to say, because I'm a graphic designer.
I think the creative people who make these games are artists. Mm. I think if you're a coder and your job is only to make the UI, you're an artist.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, that's kind of what I want to touch on. Like, you know, as a graphic designer, I have to deal with this concept of, is what I'm creating art, mm-hmm. or is what I'm creating just a solution?
Okay.
And oftentimes, when you have something that is art,
mm-hmm.
there's usually multiple solutions for that piece or something, right?
Right.
Whereas if you're creating a solution, you're just solving a particular problem.
Right.
Whereas game design, I think it is art, mm-hmm. because it's solving a problem in multiple ways.
Mm.
So when
open-ended.
Right. So when I think of games as art, my answer is absolutely yes, because there, even in the art world, there's money in that as well.
Yeah. Of course.
And there are people who are making art to
line their pockets.
Right, to make money. And at the same time, there are people who are really making things that are important to themselves.
Right.
But are also making money off of that as well.
Yeah.
So,
like, Dunkirk is a great example of a movie that, like, oh, this is a really art house, Christopher Nolan, pretentious, prestige film.
Yeah.
But it's also a summer blockbuster film.
Right.
And so that's where like my the nuance of what is art always buck up against me. I consider most of the people who work on all these projects are artists.
Right.
But sometimes and this is maybe my own pretension being pushed on to the creative endeavor. Like, I sometimes I look at it, I'm like, this is not art. Yeah. Like Suicide Squad.
Yeah, right. And oftentimes we when that question gets asked, it's usually asked on a product that is not achieving whatever end goal that we
it feels more blatantly to be a cash grab.
Exactly.
I think that I got two thoughts on it. I think that one, this conversation now is a lot more nuanced and debatable because gone are the days of, like, not saying that people who made Pong and stuff like that weren't actively trying to put something artistic out there in their own way, but gone are the days where games are literally just a time filler.
Right.
Like, that's not a thing anymore.
Technology especially, really isn't limiting us
exactly.
as much as it used to.
And right. especially now that, like, people are actively going for cinematics in their games, yep. I think that that opens the door now for there to be a more artistic expression and a discussion to be had on that.
Right.
So I think that it's a more nuanced conversation. And also, I also feel like games are art regardless, because the whole point, or at least my full understanding of art as an actor and who's taken art classes and had conversations, is the whole point of art is to make you feel.
Right.
It's either to make you feel or make you think. Like, so if you've had a visceral reaction of any kind, whether it's happiness, sadness, anger,
this game,
you know,
sucks.
Yeah. Like, if you felt, if it's compelled you to feel anything, then inherently it is art.
Right.
It's a form of expression.
Yeah, and that bucks up against certain types of games that they're not designed to make you feel or think about anything.
Well, yeah, that's the thing though.
You can feel like broke.
You can, you know,
like Burnout Paradise.
Well, no. Because Burnout Paradise,
that crash mode,
I had a blast with that. And it's not, it Burnout Paradise or like, what's that game that's kind of like Burnout?
Midnight Club Street Racing.
No, not Midnight Club.
Split Second.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Those aren't
the other game.
Obviously, like, if someone were to ask you, like, what's the most artistic game you played? Like, obviously, those wouldn't be on the list. But they look for something, which is excitement.
Right.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Pull through on that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, those aren't
that
cash
sense
grabs.
Of speed and
exactly.
That
that's exactly what they go for. They key in on that, and they make sure that they pull through on that.
Right.
You know, there are games like The Last of Us, Hellblade, you know, Limbo, you know, which are catered.
Or Journey.
Right. Yeah, which are...
I hated Journey.
Really?
My friends watched me play it, and we've talked about this off mic. I hate metaphors.
Oh,
I hate when a game isn't just telling me what it is.
Yeah.
And Journey's entire thing, I don't understand the story of that because it's all a giant fucking metaphor. So I got to the end of it and I'm like, okay. I guess it's an amazing game.
Why do you hate thinking, Avery?
I hate thinking. Don't get metaphor, damn it.
Yeah. No, but yeah, those type of games are catered toward a very specific emotional experience to be had.
Yeah.
Then you got your Call of Duties, which maybe early on were literally made to, like, pull you into this warlike scenario. But right. now, as time has gone on, even though they've bought more and more actors to do mocap and stuff like that, it's like, this is a yearly thing. We're going to keep doing this because we know it's successful.
Right.
But for the most part, I think, especially as we continue to evolve and technology continues to get more advanced, I think the games are, like, the whole is game art, or is gaming art conversation is definitely going to be a yes at a certain point.
Yes, the minute anyone can make a game and you can fully separate the economic money from it, gaming will instantly become a recognizable art form.
Yeah, I think it's just going to get to the point, it's going to be... It's going to be
because it becomes
such
a
commonplace
thing. Yeah, because it becomes a thing that anyone can do to express
right,
themselves.
Right, just like the old question was, oh, people still play games?
Because, yeah,
have a phone, yes.
That is a good point because unlike, you know, filmmaking or acting or drawing, like, those are things that anyone can do. Yeah. Maybe not well, but these are
anyone
things that
anyone can do.
Yeah. Whereas game design... That's a
you need a computer science degree and five friends who are okay working for $0 and hoping that your little game about sandwiches will make them enough.
And so I think that
you're the backstory of I Am Bread.
I think that now that is a more because the whole is gaming art conversation at first was just like, oh, it's just entertainment, it's dumb, and yeah. it's like frivolous. Yeah. But now it's more of a nuanced thing where it's like, is it art because...
It was more of a question there's that more was of a, posed yeah. that was posed outside of the gaming
yeah. industry. Yeah, but now
it's... Roger Ebert, people talking about either Flower or Journey, and, yeah. and games not art, and the gamers being like, fuck you,
right? Yeah. Exactly.
Games are art. We're not going to actually explain why games are art.
Now it's more art. Of an inward conversation of right. just like, bruh, there's a whole lot of skill, and most of this stuff, especially on the come up, most people aren't trying to make this game just because they're making this game, even though now we have like Steam and yeah. stuff like that.
And then you get into the conversation of, okay, games are art. What makes an artist? Because like...
The ability to create.
Is a football player an artist?
Is a football player?
I'm just like... Well, like, the no, more that, nuanced the conversation about what is an artist becomes, it becomes like...
Because I think that there is a clear delineation.
Yeah.
I think that there's a clear delineation between, like, if you ask if a football player is an artist, they're clearly an athlete. They're pushing their body to be able to do this one thing.
Because like, for them, it's skill-based rather than expression-based.
Exactly.
So, that's when video game creation...
Yeah, so they're an artist in terms of their product is their body.
Yeah, whereas, but that's... If you ask most athletes, they're like, I'm trying to be the best, not I'm trying to create something with
that's
this.
True. That's a good
whereas,
point, yeah.
like, with an artist... It's like I'm actively using the skills
that I...
You're not
trying to be the best. You're just trying to...
Well, some of you are. But yeah, like it's mostly like I'm trying to use this thing that I crafted with my hands or reappropriate something that I've had to bring something new to it. That's the basis of being an artist.
Right.
Whereas an athlete, it's like I'm just pushing myself so that I can be the best I can possibly be
right.
with what I'm going for. So yeah, I mean... Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, yeah.
This is a very interesting conversation.
Yeah.
I based on what you guys have said, I totally agree with you with the modern interpretation of what games are. I still do, and that's because of my own pretension.
Yeah, that's fair.
That like I will always buck up against like, oh man, games are art. I'm sitting there fucking playing Call of Duty. I'm like, yeah, I blew up this dude's head.
But I think in that way, Call of Duty can be art because it is so for example, it's the choice of sound they use. It's the choice of...
I totally agree with you.
Right,
point was that the minute that type of game comes in front of me where it's like, this game is
it's clearly... It's harder for you to buy.
Clearly for entertainment's sake yeah. rather than to elicit emotions and elicit thinking, that's when my brain will immediately think like,
oh, yeah.
our games aren't.
I got you. Okay, that's
yeah,
fair.
Yeah.
Now, to move from one interesting topic to another interesting thing, it's time for another rousing edition of Who Am I?
Who am I?
I want to point out that was an amazing segue.
Thank you. I'm coming for your throat, Cameron.
We're coming for you, nigga. Right? There was no pretension. There was no put on my crown. Right. Talking about my segues. Hey, you guys want to know something really funny inside the Actor Studio about this podcast? And Cameron on our Slack is called Assault the Segways. Like, we're all our real names.
And
right?
He's the Sultan of Segways.
This is why you show up for every episode, Cameron.
But hit us with them rules. I mean, okay. Not even the rules. Just hit us with that.
Who am I? Okay, yeah. So this will be the fourth attempt that we've done
yeah.
with this game.
Yep.
I think I was able to fix its problem for the last game.
With the last one, yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
we're going to try one more rousing game. Everyone knows who am I. I'm going to think of a video game character. I'm going to
mm-hmm.
give out clues. My co-hosts are going to have to guess who that character is based on the clues. There will be 10 points are valued based on... that number, yada, yada, yada. All right, let's do this.
Okay.
All right. Who am I? I am a classic video game boss.
Sephiroth.
Bowser.
Okay, wrong. Okay, clue 9. I'm paying for the sins of others.
Paying for the sins of others. Paying for the sins of others. Paying for the sins.
That's not going to help you get it.
Lucifer. No, wait, what?
Alucard.
Okay, nope, both are wrong. I'm referred to by a Moby Dick character. Name, I'm sorry.
By a Moby Dick name?
I'm referred to, like, people refer to me at certain points with a name from Moby Dick.
Oh my god.
Pass.
I know these names, but Ahab?
Yes! But that's not what the character that's not who the character
Damn
is.
Damn it! Okay.
Okay, so Marcus is close. Okay. Clue 7. I command a military installation.
I'm passing. I don't know.
The villain from I don't know why I'm not getting their name. Kafka or Kefka?
No.
Damn.
Okay. Number 6. Oh wait. Yeah, number 6. I'm medically trained.
Medically trained?
Yes, medically trained. A big point of contention with this game going forward was that I was going to try and make the first 5 as vague as possible.
Yeah.
So even though it doesn't seem like I'm giving out clues, they're all clues to something, guys.
Okay.
That's fair.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm passing.
Yeah, yeah, I'm passing.
Okay. One. Number 5, I'm missing an eye.
Oh my gosh.
Big Boss?
No.
Solidus Snake?
No. 4, I'm heavily influenced by David Bowie.
I feel like I've recently recently seen this character before.
Liquid? No.
No.
Damn it. I realize I was wrong right when I said it.
I don't know.
Okay. Number 3, I have a robot hand.
What's Snake from Metal Gear 5.
Okay, you got it.
Okay.
Like, you were close with Big Boss, because technically that character is Big Boss.
Damn it.
Technically that character is a completely different person than Venom Snake.
Damn it!
So, medically trained, what does that mean?
He was at the end of Ground Zeroes, when Snake gets blown up, he's with his medic. Right. And they make a big point in the game that the character you're playing in Metal Gear 5, Venom Snake, is that medic, who's had facial reconstructive surgery and then memory conditioning to believe that he's Big Boss.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Great.
That was number 2 and 3 that I've had reconstructive surgery, and number 1 was I am the shadow of Big Boss.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
That was that. Is that good?
Right. Yeah.
That good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll do one more.
One more.
That had me on edge.
Yeah, I know. I'm a legendary hero.
Okay.
Mario.
Legendary hero. I already got that one. Legendary hero. Pass.
Okay. Number 9. I travel around with a partner.
You travel around with a partner?
Yes.
I already said Mario, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Dang it. I'm passing. I can't.
Mega Man.
Okay.
Legend.
Number 8. My greatest attribute is my luck.
Nathan Drake?
Greatest attribute. What? A domino?
No. Okay, guys. Number 7. I am a naval officer.
A naval officer. I'm going to say Solid Snake.
I got nothing.
Number 6, I was kidnapped as a child.
This sounds terrible. I got nothing. Kidnapped as a child.
Samus?
Okay. Number 5, I wear powered armor.
Master Chief.
Aaron?
Got it.
I knew when I said the look on Avery's face when I said Samus, and then he said powered armor. I'm like, there's only one other person this can be.
Okay. Number 4 was I'm known as the demon.
Oh, by the Covenant.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then number 3, I am fire team leader.
Oh, okay.
And then number 2, my true faith remains a mystery.
Mm.
And number 1 is I will finish the fight.
All of those could have been Judge Dredd. But yeah, so
that was awesome.
Another successful game of Who Am I?
Canvas still 0 for 4.
Yep, sure is.
Boy.
Let's keep the streak alive.
Okay, guys, let's wrap this bitch up.
All right.
But yeah.
All right, well, this has been a...
I didn't know who wanted right. to do it.
Hand signals in success. All right, so this has been a...
You good?
Yeah, good. This has been another episode of Press X to Start Podcast. We're here to bring you the games, the news, the funny, and our culture. We hope you've had as much time... We hope that you've had... a fun time listening as we've had talking. And again, as a reminder, all our podcasts can be found at Podbean at pressxtostart.podbean.com, iTunes and Google Play at pressxtostart. Also, if you want to join the conversation, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at pressx2start. Well, you know... It's been fun.
Yes, it has been fun. Right. Despite your awkwardness right now.
I don't know.
Until next time.
Right.
I've been Marcus Ellison.
I've been Avery Williams.
And DJ's been having a
I need to get more sleep.
Be good, everybody.
Yeah, take care and get sleep.
Be easy.
It's important.